Welcome to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. We are in the middle of conference championship week. I am coming to you actually from the bowels of Madison Square Garden. I'm here at the Big East Tournament with my colleague, Jeff Borzello, who's actually being subjected to Cincinnati Providence. It's 20-8 right now, and it's kind of an ugly game. But Parrish and Goodman are coming to me from the other side of the country. Parrish is out in L.A. He's doing TV work with Leadoff. Good job there last night, buddy. Goodman is in Vegas, he sends this picture message of Kesha that I get when I wake up, and he sent it at like, dude, you were up late, Goodman. We'll get to that in a second, but thank you for coming back in. Listen, if you enjoy the podcast, pass along to your friends on iTunes, Ion College Basketball. We're going to have plenty coming, really good guests, and it's the best time of year, so hope you enjoy that. Gary, how you doing, buddy?
I am well. I'm in California, like you said, out here, TV duties, and then headed to the Big Ten Tournament. What's today? Wednesday? Tomorrow night, taking the red eye to get there. I land in Chicago at 9:30 a.m. and will be at the United Center by 11, fingers crossed.
All right, good deal. And Goodman, I know you were ironing, actually, as we started this podcast intro. Are you all settled there, buddy?
Yeah, I got a good day in front of me. I don't know where to go. I mean, the hardest part today is, so I got Mountain West and Pac-12 and WAC all today. What do I do?
Well, first of all, you sound like you're already enjoying Vegas because your voice seems to be going a little bit hoarse. How are you holding up over there?
I'm good. I partied with Kesha last night, and I'm going to try to bring her maybe to the WAC tournament today.
Okay. Yeah. We will get into the basketball, but I cannot not go on without asking what you were doing at a Kesha concert, at a club she was at. Can we get a little bit of background here?
Yeah, a buddy of mine from back home, Cody Starrett, basically runs the club at Caesars Pure. So he set us up pretty good, got us in. A buddy of mine's out here as well from home, and we got in, and I think we were the oldest ones in the club last night. it was fun, though. It actually was pretty fun. You know, we went up top and, you know, free drinks, and we're sitting on the rooftop bar just kind of catching up, and again, just kind of people watching as much as possible, and people probably thinking, you know, who's that grandpa sitting up there that they let in? But then, you know, she came on, she sang like three songs.
Did you know any of them?
Yeah, no, I knew all of them. My daughter's 9. She listens to all that stuff. Okay. So I knew all of them, you know, and I tried to get up there, you know, close. She looks a little worn, though.
Yeah, she does. She looks. I saw the picture. She looks like she's been she's been partying even a little harder than you have lately.
No question. Listen, I look bad. Honestly, I think Kesha looks worse right now.
I think that might. I don't know if we're gonna take it that, but your point's taken. I understand your point.
But she was good. It was fun. It was good. I won some money at the blackjack table. Had a great, you know, steak dinner at the steak place. What was it called? The Out. Yeah, it's something. I don't know. Something like that. Right at Caesar's.
You went to Outback. No, like my man's in Vegas kicking it at Outback talking about his great steak dinner.
I'll find the name of it after. Caesar's is good. I had a good filet. And now, again, I'm trying to figure out, do I go to, UNLV Air Force at noon, or do I go to Arizona State Stanford? What do you think?
I go Stanford, ASU Stanford.
See, I'm leaning towards UNLV Air Force because I'm going to do Pac-12 all day Friday, Thursday.
Yeah. Thursday.
And when's the last time you saw Anthony Bennett? Have you seen Anthony Bennett this year?
No, so I really need to see him, to be honest. I want to see him. And I want to see, like, what's wrong with UNLV? Like, you've seen him a couple times. I've seen him a bunch on TV. But, like, what is wrong with this team? And can they get it back? Because if they can get their mojo back, they can figure it out. And I don't know if they can at this point in time, but if they ever could, man, like there just aren't 5 more talented teams in the country than UNLV. So
the problem with them, at least when I saw them, and I haven't seen them since late January in person. I have obviously seen them on TV since then. I don't know about getting the mojo back. They won, I think, 5 of their past 6, right? So they're playing probably.
They lost to Fresno, though. Gary, they lost to Fresno.
At home, I got that, right? But the problem with the team is that they don't fit together. It's like they've got, you know, like 6 or 7 or 8 great pieces, but they're missing the one piece, or they got too many of the same pieces, and they're missing one key piece. They don't have a true point guard. They've got, I don't want to say too many bigs because you can't have too many bigs, but when you have Bennett Birch and Moser, you're tempted to try to play them all, but those three on the court together is not a good lineup, and I think that's something that Dave Rice has struggled with this year, because though we look across the country at North Carolina and we say, okay, how did UNLV get better? They just decided to play their best players, period, and that's how they got better, regardless of position. Well, if you take that exact same approach and apply it to UNLV, it actually makes UNLV worse.
Anthony Marshall, just a point guard. Like, I think if they had, like, you know, instead of Anthony Marshall, Kendall Marshall, you know, somebody that could get people the ball in the right spots, I think you might be able to play Moser, Bennett, and Birch together. Maybe. And, again, it's a stretch. But what do you do? And it's funny because people say it all the time, just recruit the best players. Just get the best players. Well, some teams can do it and get away with it, but you're seeing it even at Kentucky this year. They don't fit well together. What is Alex Poitras? What is he? Is he a three? Is he a four? You know, it's just, again, UNLV, I don't think they're going to get it back, but I'm very interested. That's the game I'm planning on going to right now. And then the big one for me is the nightcap, which kind of hurts because, you know, the late game, Gary, San Diego State, Boise State, I got to write off that. The one before it is like New Mexico against Wyoming. And unless Luke Martinez shows up, I'm not writing off that one. So I got San Diego State, Boise State at 9:00. That just kind of throws a monkey wrench into my night.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I give both of you guys a ton of credit. I love that that we do this podcast because, Goodman, you're going to have no voice by Friday. I can already tell, and I appreciate on such little sleep you guys doing this. I do want to hit on Goodman again. Not hit on Goodman. Oh, I'm low on sleep, too, and the media room is getting kind of nuts. So I want to talk about Gonzaga, which Goodman was at. Talked about a little on the podcast with Farnham on Monday. Gonzaga's clearly going to be a number one seed. I think Gonzaga is one of the four best teams in the country as well. Forget ranking. We understand how rankings work, but I hope I'm not just falling for them because they're going to be a number one and they've had this great winning streak and ran through the WCC. But what did you glean from that game, Goodman? And just overall, Gonzaga as a whole, you know, their mentality going in, they know what's at stake. They know the pressure and how it's kind of a no more excuses kind of game for them, right?
Yeah, and they're using this as fuel. I mean, they hear all this and they're using this fuel. And listen, here's the deal with Gonzaga. Their backcourt is really good, Kevin Pangos and Gary Bell. Their frontcourt is even better. Mm-hmm. You know, Kelly Olynyk, we all know, I mean, he's going to be a top 20 pick. Maybe he'll be top 15 or 10. I don't know. But he's going to go in the top 20 and is one of those guys that, again, he can stand up to anybody in the country. Their size can stand up to anybody in the country. You look at Elias Harris. Then you got Sam Dower and the big Polish kid, Karnowski, coming off the bench. So they got four legitimate bigs, and really talented and some experienced bigs. The only thing I worry about with Gonzaga is – honestly, is do they have that guy that can put in the floor and really score the basketball, a big wing that can score it, and a guy that can guard? Like, Mike Hart can guard, and I love him. I wrote about him last week. I love him from walk-on tryout to a starter right now. But can he guard, let's say, Kasim Suleiman? Can he guard a Wayne Blackshear? He's guarding guys, you know, right now in the WCC for the most part. But I don't know if he can guard a big-time athletic scorer, and that worries me. But listen, Gonzaga's got every right to be a number one seed when you look around from the resume test to the look test. I've seen all those teams. I mean, the Floridas, the New Mexicos, the Michigans, the Miamis, the Kansases, the Georgetowns. On paper and in person, they're every bit as good. Again, it's going to depend largely on matchups, whether they're able to get to the Final Four.
Gary, did you want to chime in on Gonzaga at all?
I think they've locked up a number one seed. I'm not sure they'll be the number one overall seed because I think still Duke could maybe pass them. Indiana, right, with a Big Ten tournament title, could pass them. And I'd be curious what you guys think, because I was talking about this last night, and it seems clear to me that though there are maybe 11, 12 teams still in play conceivably for a number one seed, I think there's only two up for grabs, or at least I think there should only be two up for grabs. I think Gonzaga should be locked in right now, and I think Indiana winning, being the outright Big Ten champions, in other words, being the best Big Ten team over a 3 months, 2.5 month span, I think that should be good enough for a number one seed, regardless of what happens in Chicago. So if I were in charge of this thing, I'd have Gonzaga as a one, Indiana as a one, and I would have everybody else playing for the other two. Is that fair?
I agree with that now, and I wouldn't have a week ago.
You have Duke as a one, do you not?
Oh, if I had to like fill it out today, Duke would be a one, yes. But like if Duke lost his first game in the ACC tournament, I would say second place finish in the ACC, early loss in the ACC tournament. I could justify making them a two, given, you know, depending on what happens elsewhere right. around the country. This is my only point, that if I had to fill it out today, my ones would be Gonzaga, Indiana, Duke, and Louisville. All right. But my point is that Gonzaga and Indiana should be locked in right now, and everybody else is playing for those other two spots, with Duke and Louisville being the favorites to get them.
I agree. If Indiana loses their first Big Ten game, I still think they should get a number one seed, even if, you know, Michigan State or Michigan wins the Big Ten. Maybe we have two. That'll be interesting to see what happens with the Big Ten if Indiana does not win that tournament, and you've got Michigan and Michigan State. If one of them do win it, how will the one seed shake out? Goodman, we'll transfer to this because, you know, the next time we talk, the seeds will already be in place. I'm interested to see how that reaction will be. Who gets the ones? Who doesn't? It will depend on who wins these conference tournaments. But obviously, geography means so much. I mean, teams would rather get a two seed closer to home than get a one and get shipped an extra 500 or 600 miles. Who do you think is going to end up with the ones? Can we do some projection? And if you want to run down the twos, I mean, why not? Let's have a little fun here and give listeners an idea of what they should expect. And if we're wrong, we're wrong, and then they can hold it over our heads.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we don't know how these conference tournaments are going to play out. Like Gary said, I think Indiana and Gonzaga are locked in as ones. And I think you probably got, I would say then, 10 teams maybe in the mix still.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it yesterday. How about this? You know, I guess we could talk a little inside baseball here. For Sunday, we, as soon as the bracket is released, want to have stories up on the four number one seeds at CBSSports.com, right? And so every year, about this time, we start going through it, and we try to find, okay, let's get all the teams that could conceivably be a number one seed. And then if we can scratch them off before Sunday, we'll scratch them off before Sunday. But let's go ahead and get those stories assigned. That way we at least have it all covered. That way we're not sitting on Sunday afternoon going, hey, somebody needs to write about Florida, because it looks like Florida is going to be a number one seed now. We didn't think they were back then. And so yesterday I get to looking at this, and I'm going to divide them up between me and Norlander and Borzello and Goodman. And I think I came up with 12 teams that at least – you could envision a scenario, if this stuff happens over here and that stuff happens over there and then this happens here, that they could conceivably be a number one seed. And so if we're penciling in, or even magic markering in Indiana and Gonzaga, that means, according to what I looked at yesterday, there's about 10 teams fighting for two number one seeds, which is I don't want to say like the biggest number ever, but an unusually large number.
Yeah, usually we're dealing with six or seven.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I think I enjoy it. I also think I've been of the opinion that you want to put those 12, maybe barely expanded to about 14 teams. To me, there's a clear line of separation there. Goodman, do you agree in terms of just quality? The slope begins to really steepen.
Yeah, you know where it is? It's after the three line.
Yeah.
I looked at it and I thought it was going to be after the two line. But it's clearly, to me, the drop-off comes after the three line. You know, again, you want to talk about the two seeds. You know, you're talking now about one of a Louisville or Georgetown. Probably, I say whoever wins the Big East tournament, if one of those wins it, gets a one. The other
Agree.
Gets a two.
Agree.
Kansas should probably be a two. Miami, unless they win the ACC tournament, should probably be a two. Florida, then Michigan State. So what do you do? Somebody's going to get, to me, sweet two.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. No, but then you go to the fours or threes and four, you know, fours basically. And I think you're talking about a group that probably includes like Marquette, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, maybe, or somebody like that,
Ohio,
or Arizona,
yeah, Ohio State,
St. Louis.
Yeah,
and you're honestly, your mouth's watering if you're a 13 seed like a Valpo maybe will be, or a, you know, Bucknell or somebody like that. You're saying to yourself, "Hey, listen, I got Kansas State or Marquette in the first round. I kind of like this."
Yeah, well, actually, let me pitch this. Let's say St. Louis wins the A-10 tournament. You know, they'll only have six losses. Aren't they going to have a pretty good inline to a three seed there? I mean, don't they have a chance to hop up?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, but, yeah, I mean, certainly, it's not – if you're a projected four right now when you win your conference tournament, and assuming all the favorites aren't going to win theirs, you can, you know, reasonably expect to jump up to the three line. So yes, I think that's possible. In fact, probable for St. Louis if it wins the A-10 tournament. But I think going back to the ones, it's going to come down to Indiana and Gonzaga. And then if Duke wins, they're going to get one as well. And then in the Big East, if Louisville wins, they get one. If Georgetown wins, they get one. If neither wins, then we could be talking about maybe Kansas sneaking back in, or if neither wins and then Michigan State or Michigan wins the Big Ten tournament, we could be talking about a second Big Ten team as a number one seed. So it has been fun, you know, to look at all the possibilities, because I do think that achievement and that honor, and it is an honor to be a one seed. I mean, I know statistically it means you're more likely to get to the Sweet 16 and all that, but it also means that Greg Gumbel's saying your name at the top of the broadcast. It's a source of pride for a basketball program, and so it's fun to think that we're just a few days away from Selection Sunday. There's still a double-digit number of teams that have a realistic shot to get that honor.
Goodman, I'll get to your blog post from earlier this week with the proposal about the small league conference tournaments, but I wanted to address something that I have not seen anyone write about yet this year. It comes up almost every year. I just wanted to bring it up as a question on the podcast. In this era, you know, 2013 and looking back in the past few years, do you think we're putting the right amount of emphasis and proper perspective on championship week, you know, all these conference tournaments? Do you think we overreact? Do you think maybe the committee tries to overcompensate and underreacts? You know, everyone loves these games. I just wanted to give listeners an idea of what we think of how we react to these. Because these games, guys, we're at these games. They happen. They're over. Next round, the next day. These teams win. These teams lose. And so you're getting this flurry of information. And I wanted just to dispel to listeners how we thought all of that was kind of being taken in by both writers and reactors and also the committee. Goodman, you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, what I think it is kind of a great lead-in for the NCAA tournament as much as anything else, because it doesn't mean all that much.
I agree.
It does, okay? There's certain teams today, again, a Boise State tonight. You know, if they get this win against San Diego State, they're in. We know that. There's, you know, the teams in the SEC, the Alabamas, the Kentuckys, the Tennessees, Ole Miss. But I think more than anything, what it does is it allows the country to kind of grab hold of college basketball right now, to get to know the names and teams a little bit more for those that haven't, and just to kind of get excited about the NCAA tournament. I think that's honestly what it does more than anything else, is just gets people going in preparation for Sunday and for next week.
Yeah, I got, you know, I don't know how much emphasis we put on it or not, but, you know, I think to complain about that is to, you know, complain about something that we, you know, the opposite that we complain about, you know, for much of the year, which is I wish people would pay attention to college basketball more. I mean, that's what we spend November, December, January, and February talking about. And so we get to March and now we go, well, now we're putting too much emphasis on the games. Like, I think this is nice. Every night now on national television, you know, college basketball is featured in games that for at least the small conferences matter in the biggest way possible. So, you know, how many people, you know, understood that, you know, Rick Pitino's son was a game away from the NCAA tournament, or his former lead assistant was a game away from the NCAA tournament? These created storylines, you know, for the sport that we cover. So I'm all for it.
All right, Goodman, set up the post you had, the idea you had earlier, and I know you got some of it from Bruce Pearl, who you do your radio show with on Sirius XM Channel 91, Inside College Basketball. I love this idea. I fear that no league will have the guts to do it, but I tell you what, the first one that does it, and if it's successful, others would follow. You want to set the table on the proposal to try and fix championship week to a certain degree?
I just, again, every year it comes up, and you've got these teams that for 3 months dominate their league. And Middle Tennessee did it this year in the Sun Belt and lose to Richard Pitino and FIU in the semis. And Stony Brook has now lost. By the way, they've won their league regular season title 3 of the last 4 years, and they have not won their conference tournament any of those years. So they have been in the NIT. And Steve Peichel and his best player, Tommy Brenton, have yet to play in the NCAA tournament. I just think that's unfair. To me, it's a lot harder, as we see, to win a regular season title and be dominant, to get fortunate and play well for 3 days. And I just don't think that's fair. So Bruce Pearl brought up the idea the other day of, let's say, you know, Middle, in that specific example, Florida International, let's say, ends up, well, they lost. Who'd they lose to? I'm tired.
Western Kentucky.
Yes. Yeah, WKU.
Ray Harper. Okay, so Western Kentucky wins that tournament. So now you would have Western Kentucky having to play Middle Tennessee in basically a rubber match, and winner take all, whoever wins that one. So basically the regular season champ automatically, if they don't win their conference tournament, gets a chance, another opportunity to get in the NCAA tournament playing the tournament title winner. And I think that's fair. I don't know how it would work from a TV perspective. That's the I think that's the most difficult part of it all. But I think, again, it would reward the right team. And I think, again,
Here's the problem with all this. And I actually, if I were Kermit Davis, I mean, I'd just be sick. For two straight years, he's had NCAA tournament caliber teams, teams that maybe could have advanced. And for the second straight year, he's probably going to miss it based on an upset loss in a league tournament. So I get it from that perspective. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of logistical problems here that would make it maybe not impossible to figure out, but very tough. As Jeff said, okay, you got a TV issue. What channel are you putting these games on? Because people are going to want to see them, right? So they've got to be on TV somewhere, except you can't expect CBS and CBS Sports Network and ESPN and ESPN2 and ESPNU to just start rearranging programming on the fly. Beyond that, what about the arenas? Like, what if your event happens to be in a pro arena and you got an NBA game coming back in town the next night? You know, where are you playing the game at? You know,
well, you got to figure all that out.
I think it's a lot to figure out, but also I think more than anything, you know, the people who isn't this, correct me if I'm wrong, if Sun Belt Conference wanted to award its automatic bid to its league champion, they could do that, couldn't they?
Yes, they could. They just,
right.
I know. That's absolutely.
So it's what the Ivy League does. And so
they want to make money off their conference tournament.
No, I got that. But I think once you decide this is the way we're going to do it, like it's up to you and you decide, then you forfeit the right to bitch about it. Like, listen, it's up to you, man. You know, if you don't want to have the conference and beyond all that, I think unfair is I understand the point, but like, to me, unfair is something more rooted in, we didn't understand it was going to be like that. Everybody knows the deal when you start playing in the Sun Belt or the Horizon or the Big West or whatever. You know that you can be awesome for 3 months, but if you slip up for one game, you're screwed. I mean, so you know what the score is going in. And then beyond all that, you know.
What if you have an injury, Gary? Gary, what if you're the best player? You're the best player in the championship game. You've dominated it all year. And in the championship game, somebody dies in your family.
Oh,
and
Lord.
And your team loses. And it's one bad day. One bad day. You dominated all year. You're a senior. This is your fun game. I understand the system. I get it. But, I don't think it's fair to those teams because, again.
Okay. Well, then I got that. So, if we're going to start trying to, you know, make everything as fair as possible to compensate for injuries and, as you put it, deaths and families, what do we do about North Carolina losing its starting point guard in the NCAA tournament? Or what do we do about Duke, being dominant all year long and then losing in a first-round game to Lehigh? You know what?
Opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. I compare apples to apples here.
Okay, I know, but here's what I'm saying. Like, the way we decide the champion in this is advanced on a single elimination tournament. So to them say that it's unfair to have single elimination tournament seems a little wild to me. Like this is the way we do it, you know. And so
does that mean it should be the way we do it?
Well, I mean, I just don't I don't.
I, we like, went to we went upset. To 68.
Well, here's what I'm trying to tell you is that I get it that it sucks if you have a great season and then that season is cut short because you lose one single game because of an injury or because you just perform poorly in one single game. Like Kentucky was dominant in 2010, right? And then they just lose a game to West Virginia in Elite Eight. And it was like, how is that team never going to be a team that never went to the Final Four? How is that team not going to cut a national championship next? But it just happened, and that's just the price you pay. And really, on just a different stage, it's the same price we're making other people pay. If you are having an unfortunate performance in this must-win situation, or if you suffer an injury in a time where you can't, you're probably going to pay a price to wear for the rest of your lives or careers or whatever. You have to wonder what could have been. We do that in the NCAA tournament. I don't understand why it's such a tragedy that we do it in the conference tournaments. If I were Kermit Davis, it'd make me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, and ultimately this comes down to leagues are willing to gamble and take more money and chance that they're not going to have their best representative in rather than assure the regular season winner an automatic bid and give their team inherently the best chance to get more money and more tournament units by getting more victories. So it's a gamble that they're willing to take. I like the idea. I don't think it's possible that it's going to happen, but I tell you, I'd really embrace it. But yes, there are obviously some issues there. I want to wrap up the podcast with this. I've gotten a few tweets over the past 2 weeks asking me to do a little more bubble stuff with you two when you're on the podcast. I said, okay, so what I'm going to do is every team that's on the fence, according to our Jerry Palm, I'm just going to ask you guys if you think they should be in. And I know this is also contingent on...
Are you using the palm reader?
I'm not using the palm reader, but I do recommend the palm reader.
I love the palm reader.
The palm reader is incredible. Seriously, no joke, no snark. The Jerry Palm reader on our site tells you what other teams need to do to improve your team or whatever team you're looking for, their RPI. It's an incredible tool. So I got a handful.
Go to cbssports.com.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so these are his on-the-fence ones. St. Mary's is the first one. Gary, you go first. St. Mary's, should they be in? 0-3 against Gonzaga. Randy Bennett never schedules well. They've been burned, and they've actually made the tournament every other year, so the pattern indicates that they will miss. But do you think they should be in or out?
I think they'll be in. I think they probably should be in, but I won't shed a tear if they're not. If you don't like being put in this position, schedule aggressively outside of your league.
All right, Goodman, real quick, what do you think on St. Mary's?
Yeah, I agree 100% with Gary and everything he said. I think they should be. They're going to get in, but again, you got to schedule better.
Yes, I agree. And to me, they have the look of a tournament team. Like, no doubt about it. I think they have
got... No. They got one guy who gives them the look of
yeah,
a tournament.
Yeah, but that one guy is enough. Like, no. Okay. No.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
He is.
Yeah.
He's got... Now, Palm's got Wichita State on the fence. To me, Shockers are in. What about you guys?
I think they're in. You know, they took some losses that make you just shake your head. They ended up taking two in the last week to Creighton. But that's a quality basketball team that does have some quality wins, one at VCU. I think they will be in. I think they should be in.
I'm not sure, guys. I think it depends on what some of these other teams do this week. I think they're sweating it out right now and praying that, you know, in the SEC – Alabama and Ole Miss don't knock off, you know, Florida, Missouri or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think Wichita, honestly, I think they're probably in today, but they could get left out depending on what happens here.
I think they're going to be in with some room to spare. I don't think they'll be in Dayton. I'll say they're going to be in 11 that dodges Dayton. He's got LaSalle, and we'll see what they do in the A-10, but LaSalle beat Villanova. And outside of the conference, they haven't done much else than that. I think LaSalle is out right now. In fact, I kind of want to see LaSalle win too. Goodman, what are you thinking?
I think John Giannini's team's in. They're pretty good. I mean, Ramon Galloway, the kid Dern, they got some good players. They've done well in the A-10. I think they finished in a top or third maybe in the A-10, and that's been a pretty good league this year. I got them in today, but again, like we said, all of these are kind of contingent on, well, what else happens? Does somebody else steal a bid?
Right.
So I have LaSalle in today. I don't want to sound like I have everybody in.
I think LaSalle should be. No, I'm with Goodman on this one. I think LaSalle should be in. I mean, listen, they've got wins over Butler at VCU, a win over Villanova, and only one loss outside of the top 80 of the RPI. And so, listen, I wouldn't advise them to lose their first game in Brooklyn because then you're going to be sweating it out. But I think that's a deserving tournament team. What have they showed over the course of an entire season? They can beat good teams, Butler, VCU, Villanova, and they don't really lose to bad ones. Again, only loss outside of the top 80 is a loss that was bad. It was to a team right around the 200 mark. But there's only one of those. I think they should be in.
We could see Lionel Simmons maybe sitting behind LaSalle bench or Speedy Morris. Okay. That's what was selling.
Okay. 3-7 against the top 100 is Iowa State. They obviously have those two heartbreaking losses to Kansas. So I'm going to present the situation to you. Iowa State loses their first Big 12 tournament game. Not what they are right now. They lose their first Big 12 tournament game. Are they in?
Which is against Oklahoma, by the way, in what could be a knockout type game.
Yes.
I think Iowa State should get in. I do. I think they got absolutely hosed in a couple calls this year. Obviously, that one against Kansas, where George Niang clearly drew the charge and Elijah Johnson was given the free throws and Kansas ended up winning. The mayor in, I think Iowa State deserves to be in also.
They should be in. And remember, there are humans in that committee room and they understand what happened in that Kansas game at Iowa State. I think that's not something that's going to show up on a sheet with all the wins against top 50, top 25, but it's something those people know, and it's something I think they should consider. If Iowa State right now had a win over Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, two wins over Baylor, a win over BYU, a win over Florida Gulf Coast, and only two losses outside of the top 80, we would all say they're in question. Well, that's what they would have if the refs didn't screw them in that game against Kansas. I think Iowa State should be in regardless, but if they lose the first game, they'll probably have to sweat it out.
I think if they lose that game, they're out. A few more here, and then we'll wrap up the podcast. One, I don't see how Villanova's on Palm's fence. Their wins are just too good. They've beaten too many good – I know they all came at home. They still have beaten too many good teams for me to say – they should be out. So to me, no matter what Villanova does, I'm going to see them here tonight at the Garden for their first Big East tournament game. I think they're in with a little bit of room to spare. What about you, Gary?
When you got wins over Louisville, Georgetown, Marquette, Syracuse, and Connecticut, I mean, that should be, given what else we're talking about around the bubble, like that should be good enough. They've only got two losses outside of the top 90 of the RPI, and this is a team that, what do you want in the NCAA tournament? Somebody who's proved that they can beat good people. Somebody that has a realistic chance to advance. And Villanova has shown that. Again, yes, most of the good wins have been at home. Really, their best road win was at Connecticut. But still, Louisville, Georgetown, and Marquette tied for the Big East championship. And they beat all three of them. That's good enough, I think.
Listen, we got to have the best-looking guy in college basketball in the NCAA tournament again.
Word.
Gotta have him. I mean, think about it. He's got that little satchel there too. I mean, he looks good.
I knew this would come up.
Jay Wright, Villanova, put him in.
Okay.
Can we talk about the teams that shouldn't be in?
Well, hold on. I got two more. Yeah. Listen, you guys are putting all these teams in. So.
I know. We got to put somebody out. We got to put somebody out. Ask us about Seton Hall.
No, that's an easy one. Yeah. No. How about this though? How about UMass? I mean, they have one win against the top 50, and Palm's got them on the fence. To me, UMass has serious work to do.
Yeah, UMass, when your best win is over a LaSalle team that we think should probably be in, but might not be, and you have two losses outside of the top 130 of the RPI, I think they're out right now. They can win their way in, but if we started it today, they'd be out.
Agree. Yeah, your hometown Minutemen, Goodman, they're out. Okay, well then what about this? And how does Palm, I mean, Palm is just, he must have death threats from Virginia. He has refused to put them in any sort of good situation. They are 4-2 against the top 50. We've seen what they've done. We've seen their good wins. The Duke win was huge at Wisconsin. I know the losses, the CAA losses. I think that the wins are enough. I have Virginia in now. I have them definitely in with one ACC tournament win. If they lose, I will have a cop-out and say I'm going to have to see what else happens there. Goodman, what are you thinking with the Cavs?
No way.
No way. Okay.
I know they beat Duke. I know they beat Wisconsin at Wisconsin. But all those losses, I mean, George Mason, Delaware, ODU, at Wake, at Georgia Tech, at Clemson, then at BC and at Florida State with everything on the line. I mean, no. I don't think they deserve to be in.
I'm no to them right now. The losses are just awful. They've got a loss to Boston College, to Georgia Tech, to Delaware, to George Mason, to Wake Forest, to Clemson, to Old Dominion. And you can't – I'm a big fan of teams that beat people, but you can't totally dismiss the losses. And they've got a lot of bad losses. I think they're out right now. I think if they were to, in the quarterfinals of the ACC tournament, knock out NC State or Virginia Tech, but it'll probably be NC State. I think that might be good enough if then they play Miami tight, presumably Miami tight in the semifinals. But if they lose their opening game in the ACC tournament, they'll be out, and they should be out.
All right, do you guys have Middle Tennessee in?
I don't. There's just not anything. There's just not enough there. You know, yeah. Let me be clear. I think that team's good enough to win a game in the NCAA tournament, but I don't think that team's body of work is good enough to get them in the NCAA tournament.
Same good. Paris
just loves Kermit Davis because he's
Dula. He's a Mississippian.
I knew he was from around there somewhere. He's from like near Olive Branch or something.
He's from Tupelo. Tupelo is the birthplace of who? Jeff Goodman.
Tupelo?
Tupelo, Mississippi is the birthplace. No. Tupelo, Matt Norlander, is the birthplace of who?
Oh, man. Faulkner?
Elvis Aaron Presley.
Is it really? How about that? Okay, there we go. Yes. All right.
Clevis and Elvis Aaron Presley. Kermit Davis and Elvis Aaron Presley born in the same city. Gary Parrish and Elvis Aaron Presley. I was born in the hospital that he died in. How about this? You ready for this? My cousin was born in the hospital Elvis Presley died in on the day that Elvis Presley died. My parents tried to go visit my aunt. They couldn't get anywhere close to the hospital. Had no idea what was going on. Here's what was going on. The king was dying inside that hospital right down the hall from not down the hall, but in the same building as my cousin was being born.
My mother's father, who died before I was born, is in the same lot and cemetery as Al Capone in Chicago. So cool stories abounding with death here. Last one, Kentucky. Obviously, you have to address the Wildcats. Goodman, is this a got to win and you're in? What if they lose? What if they drop their first one? If they drop their first one, I think they should be out.
No, you got to put them in anyway.
Yeah, so you think you're going to take the cynical approach and say no matter what, for TV purposes, they're getting put in,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, I would. I mean, if I were in the committee, I would be putting Kentucky in the first four, even if they lose. I think financially it makes sense. Interest-wise, it makes sense. I want to see Kentucky play. I want to see him somewhere because, again, they're an intriguing team. Whether you love them, whether you don't love them, it doesn't matter. This team still has three first-round draft picks. If they all come out this year, Archie Goodwin, Alex Poitras, and Willie Cauley-Stein all go in the first round. They have the potential to win a couple games in the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure you could say that about all those other teams they'd be fighting with.
I think if they lose their first game in the SEC tournament, they're going to find themselves on the wrong side or at least be sweating it out. They get no better than the first four if they lose their first game in the SEC tournament. I think one win probably secures a spot in the field of 68.
All right. Thanks, fellas. I appreciate you coming on, making time.
I need to give you props before we get off.
What?
I do. Seriously, your Nate Walters call. I'm finally going to admit.
Wow.
Unbelievable call. You made it how many years ago?
Two years ago.
Now, I've watched him enough this year. But, man, like, he is as fun to watch as almost any player in the country. This is a kid that, again, like, you watch point guards these days and you get so frustrated because none of them know how to play anymore. And then you watch Nate Walters and you're like, oh, my God. Like, if this kid played on a really good team right now that needed a point guard, and I tweeted it last night as I was watching him, South Dakota State beat North Dakota State and get an automatic berth, so Walters is back in the field. Like, if he was on an Arizona, if he was on a UNLV, I mean, those teams could win it all with a guy like that. I just love him because, again, he's not a great athlete, but he's not a great shooter. But he just knows how to play the game. And I don't know. Again, I got to give you props because you were way ahead of it.
I appreciate that. The thing I love about Walters is that 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think they must have had their spring break or whatever, and he was home and he tweeted, I'm trying to get up any jump shots in St. Cloud right now, and there are no gyms open. It was like a Saturday at 9 o'clock, and I love, like, Walter's a guy who could get drafted. He, like, could not find an open gym, and he just wanted to shoot on a Saturday night at 9 o'clock and could not find it. I thought that was a little interesting tweet by him. But it's good to see you come around, man. And now you're saying you might be in the NBA. Yeah, Fraschilla said that on the November podcast. So this is not
It took me a little while. I got to see a guy a good amount before I come to that conclusion. I have not seen him in person, so it's harder for me to judge his athleticism on TV. But, man, like I said, you just watch him compared to the other point guards out there that people are talking about that have a chance to play in the league, and you're like, this kid can play. Can he start for an NBA team? Probably not, but I think he can make a team.
All right, good stuff, fellas. Well, enjoy Vegas, Goodman. You know, you work hard and try and get as much sleep as possible. I don't think you're trying to do that, though. And then Gary, you can watch Gary on Leadoff the rest of the week before he heads to the Big Ten tournament. He's on there with Ali LaForce. So midnight Eastern, be sure to check him out. And he's going to be at the Big Ten tournament later this week. Fellas, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy Selection Sunday. And we'll catch up with each other, I guess, from our first weekend sites in 7 days. All right?
Special shout out to Tupelo.
Tupelo. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Follow @GaryParrishCBS, @GoodmanCBS. I'll be back on Friday with another podcast. Thanks so much.